Welcome to the Express Soul Health and Wellness Podcast. In each episode, you'll learn from experts about the best practices and technologies to live a happier, healthier, and hopefully a longer life. Here is your host, Claudia Erdenola.
Hello, welcome to Express Soul Health and Wellness Podcast. My name is Claudia Erdenola. I am a professional engineer with curiosity and passion for health and wellness. Every week, I bring experts to my podcast to talk about different aspects of the health and wellness. And with those experts, you and I, we learn better ways on how to take care of ourselves and get control of our health to get optimal levels in every single aspect of our lives. Today's episode is brought to you by Express Soul Coffee. Express Soul Coffee is my brand of coffee, and I designed this brand with your health in mind. Why to settle for those heavily commercialized coffees available on the market when you can enjoy it at the convenience of your house? The best coffee for your health available on the market. My coffees come from small farms, sustainable farms in South and Central America. I know the farmers that grow these coffees. I work with them, bring the coffees to the US and roast them here to your order. Means when you place your order on my website, www.expressolcoffee.com, we roast your coffee and we ship it right after. So you will enjoy the freshly roasted, most nutritious and delicious coffee ever. This morning, I was drinking Activate, which is my house blend, and it's a beautiful balanced combination between the best coffees from Colombia, the high altitude mountains of Colombia, the high altitude mountains of Guatemala, and Brazil, specifically from the area of Belo Horizonte. This coffee is 100% Arabica beans, specialty grade, and is delicious. And it's good because our Activate blend gives you that extra punch that you need for an active day. I hold many jobs, as I said, and I do sometimes need that extra energy. That's Activate, my signature blend. It will keep me going, focus, and still make me feel good because it's gentle on my stomach and my teeth, as my coffees, all of my coffees at Express Soul Coffee are low acidic, clean of molds and pesticides, and good for you. I also have every single of my coffees at the convenience of the coffee pots, so you can enjoy your coffee pots in your office, bring them with you when you're traveling, and have the best coffees always with you at your convenience. So please check it out at my website, www.expressolcoffee.com. I will appreciate your support. Thank you. If you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe right here and hit the notification button so you will be notified every time we bring new content to our podcast. Also, check our social media outlets and join our accounts. Be part of the community of the Express Soul Health and Wellness. Thank you. Our guest today is Zane Griggs. Zane is a physical trainer and expert on nutrition. His new book, Kicking Ass After 50, is receiving a lot of attention on social media for a good reason, because he is co-authoring this book with Dr. Ken Berry, and both on the book are outlining best strategies on nutrition, physical training, sleeping, and other key aspects of how you can successfully get into your journey of healthier you and successfully be kicking ass after 50, after 60, but honestly, after any age, because those strategies worked for men and women in every single age. So definitely we're going to have a great conversation with Zane. He is terrific. He knows very much about this field on physical fitness and nutrition. And he had been working for many, many years with his own clients. And as he said, his own journey on the wellness, it led him where he is right now. So let's get into our conversation with Zane Griggs. Here he is with us at Espresso Health and Wellness Podcast. Zane, good morning. Good to have you here in Espresso Health and Wellness Podcast. How is everything in your world?
It's great, Claudia. I appreciate you having me on. It's so much fun to be on here and be a guest with you. I'm used to doing this myself in your position. And so it's fun to be a guest for a change.
It's awesome. And we're going to have a great conversation today. Our audience are very engaging now in learning all of this about nutrition, fitness. And we really wanted to bring someone with your expertise on these combined strategies to keep us healthy after 50. So I am interested in learning about your journey and how you get into all of this personal training and fitness industry. What started and how has been your evolution to get at the point that you are right now?
Wow, that's been quite a while because I am after 50.
Give us the short story.
I'll do it. I'll give you the short version. But really in my early 20s, I had an interest in longevity for some reason. I'm not sure what stoked that, but I started playing with different diets. Of course, this was the early 90s. We didn't have podcasts and blogs and stuff. We had to read and experiment. So I started playing with different diets. I played with the vegetarian diet for a few years until I got kind of sick. Oh yeah. I mean, a lot of us do that.
We're searching. And I was sick. I got out of my hair, nails, crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I got some virus that the doc said I should have been able to shake. If my immune system had been strong enough, it would have been thought it was my diet. I thought, oh my gosh. So I added in a little bit of, after 3.5 years, now I was making my own almond milk. I was blending up almonds. People say, oh, you just didn't do it right. No, I was blending up dry almonds, making my own almond milk, eating black beans and rice every day. I was hungry all the time, couldn't put on muscle weight, tired. And for some reason, I was just too stubborn to really assess what was going on and think about until I got that virus. So I added in a little bit of whey protein, some salmon, some eggs, and all of a sudden, wow, the lights came on. I felt better. I realized I hadn't had coffee for 3 days. I'd forgotten to drink coffee. That's how much the energy came back. And I started putting muscle back on. I thought, okay, I've been ignoring what my body's been telling me for the last 3 years. So that led me shortly after that, probably within 5 or 6 years of that, married, having kids. And my wife had just had our third child. So this is 2002. And she couldn't shake the weight. She's doing everything she'd normally been doing. But for some reason, we're in her 30s. And the weight wasn't coming off. So she said, well, I'm going to try the Atkins diet, which was the big low carb, no carb, low carb diet back then. Lots of meat, lots of fat. Well, guess what? It worked. And the weight started falling off of her. And I tell my peers, I was working as a trainer at this point. I decided I wanted to help other people with their health. But I'd started realizing that most people will not have success with our standard guidelines or standard recommendations, especially if they're over 40 and they try to follow the standard dietary recommendations. They're not going to lose the weight. They're not going to get the level of fitness they want. I was open to trying new things. And when I told my peers, my wife, oh, she did the Atkins diet. She's losing all this weight. This is amazing. They said, oh, that's dangerous. That's a fad. That's going to, you need carbs to survive. You need to eat these carbs. And I thought, oh, but it's working. And doesn't seem to be a downside to this. And so that got me digging deeper into the whole concept of low carb. Fast forward to 2010, I've been applying low carb to my clients who wanted to lose weight and actually living it my own life. And I'm in my 40s, really 40, and started reading about intermittent fasting. So I started implementing intermittent fasting into my routine as well. Very helpful for staying lean. Energy was great and using that to help my clients as well. And so in the last, I would say 4 or 5 years, and I was big, low carb, intermittent fasting, but I really had this concept in my head that I think it's a lot of us did and maybe still do, that most of our nutrient density, most of our the micronutrients that we need, the minerals and vitamins, mm-hmm. have to come from vegetables and fruit. They have to come from plant sources. And I didn't realize until about maybe 3-4 years ago, just how nutrient dense animal foods could be, especially like organ meats, like liver and so forth. But all animal food, the fat especially, has fat soluble minerals. There's nutrients in there that we are much more bioavailable for our bodies mm-hmm. than they are from most plant sources. And so that really, I think, changed, which I wasn't expecting at that point in my career and in my life to really find something that eye-opening. But it really shifted my focus and my diet to a primarily animal-based diet of food. So that's where my micronutrients are coming from, as well as the protein and fat. And seeing that, you know, the vegetables or the fruit, I mean, I can have those when I want them if they don't disrupt my digestion, or as long as they fit with my goals, but I'm not reliant on those for my nutrient density. And so it's really led me down to this point of what's called an animal-based diet. Most of my diet comes from animal-based foods, not just for the protein and fat, but for, like I said, the micronutrients as well. And I found that it works really well for maintaining my weight and getting the nutrients I need and not being hungry all the time, not feeling like I'm deficient. And so that's kind of that's a short version, but Wonderful. It works really well with the clients. Yeah. But that's as short as I can get. It's about 20, you're talking about almost 30 years of, of trial and error there.
But I'm like you, I went to the vegetarian and it was interesting because I was told that to do meditations and some spiritual practices, I was very deep into that fasting, you really needed to be vegetarian. So I was vegetarian, but my malnutrition was keeping me so weak that I couldn't even, you know, hold my job. It was very, very bad. So I had to go back into the animal protein based diet, and everything changes just like you. It was like eye-opening. Oh my gosh, this energy. I'm very high energy person. And I really like to feel that my body carry over all what I have to do. I like to be active. I like to be outside. I like to be with people. And I was feeling so weak when I was only eating vegetables because I wasn't receiving the nutrition I needed. And so that was a good thing that you went through this journey to learning and understanding that and be able to apply that to your clients and have success stories with them as well. And my next question, and I gotta tell you a little bit first before I ask you the following. A couple of weeks ago, I have Dr. Zaldívar here on my podcast, Dr. Sara Zaldívar. And I mentioned your book in my podcast because Dr. Sara Zaldívar and myself, we have a few things in common. Other than we're immigrants, we also have our husbands with a significant age difference. Her husband is 60. My husband is 75. Her husband and my husband are in terrific physical shape. So I know it is possible to keep a very good physique and being healthy and vibrant after 50. So I want you to tell us about your new book that you co-authored with Dr. Ken Berry, which is called Kicking Ass After 50. And I love the title because very few people out there are successfully bringing the subject to the public, learning on how we can age successfully and empowering people on how to do it right. So tell us about your book.
Great. Well, I happen to have a copy right here. This is what it looks like. Kicking ass after 50. I always have one in reach these days. But yeah, very proud of it. Wrote this with Dr. Ken Berry, as you said. And we did write it to, like you said, empower people with their health at a time when many people might be giving up or just at least letting off the gas. They think it doesn't matter. They're thinking about aesthetically. Oh, why do I care about a beach body? Well, this is not about having a beach body. You can do that if you want that. But that's really, once we get to a certain age, you know, our health becomes far more important than how much we're bench pressing or how much we're squatting or, absolutely, you know, how toned your abs are. I mean, all those things can be fun goals for you if they help motivate you. But our bigger motivation, I think at this point in our lives, is being vital, having a high quality of life, being able to really be successful in our careers, to use all of our wisdom and experience that we've attained over decades of work and trial and error with our careers, and be able to still apply that with energy, and then to show up for our families in the way that they need us to be. And so those are the priorities. That your priorities shift as you get older, but there's still great demand on you to be physically healthy. And there's to let off the gas at this point in your life. You are really, you're letting yourself down, but you're also letting your family down. You are letting go of some career success, maybe 10 more successful mm-hmm. years in your career, yeah. maybe 20 plus vital years with your family. That should be worth your effort and consistency and discipline to put some thought and some action into the way you eat, the way you move, and the way you sleep. And so that's what we address in the book is diet, exercise, and sleep, because those are your three pillars. You're not going to be able to out biohack those three things. If you don't have those in place, you can mitigate. Not everything's going to be perfect, but you need to be focused with your habits consistently on those three things to have a foundation of health. And so that was our goal. So many people feel like their health is sort of escape from them. They might be really reliant on a doctor who only has maybe 7 or 10 minutes to spend with them, who's only going to do something for them if they can prescribe something or give them some sort of, you know, procedure. So if the problem is already inflamed and out of control, but they don't feel empowered. They don't know how to prevent that. They don't know how to take charge of it or to reverse it mm-hmm. once something happens. You know, if you reverse your blood pressure, your high blood pressure, reverse your high blood sugar, take 40 pounds off and keep it off without it being some sort of like gimmicky, do this extreme thing for 3 months and get this result. And then, hey, then you're done. Right? No, this is a lifestyle. This is something you have to be consistent with, but it's perfect. But it's worth it because you're doing it for your family, your career, and your own quality of life.
Now, why did you choose the 50? Why not 40? Why not 60 years old? Why 50?
Well, because Ken and I, Dr. Barry and I, are both, when we talked about doing the book a couple of years ago, I was turning 50. He was 52. So I'm 52 now. He's 54. So we're in our 50s. We want to talk to guys that were like our age and that many people aren't addressing. And it's not, and the book says a guide for men 50 and over, but I mean, all of the principles apply to everyone, every age, men and women. But it's written in really guy, straightforward guy talk, like guy to guy, very direct, very concise. Yeah, concise, simple. For a guy who doesn't have a lot of time to read a big book, but it's like, here's the information. This is why it works. Simply put, here's your simple steps. And so we try to make it something they can apply and put into place, even with a busy life. But there's also not a lot written to men or to middle age, to that age group. And that was our age group. And so to be examples of what can be accomplished at that age for Ken and I both. Ken's in great shape. Mm-hmm. I'm a gym guy. So I've been a trainer. I've been in the gym. I work out at home now because, you know, but I'm still doing that kind of weightlifting. Ken has a quite different lifestyle. He lives on a farm. So he's out doing yard work, farm work. He's dealing with brush, you know, cutting brush and raising sheep. And so that's his kind of physical activity. So it's not putting it in a typical box of fitness, but that's what starts with diet, movement, and then good sleep.
You're absolutely right, Zane. And not everyone live in an urban area and go to the gyms or like me, I have my gym at my house. It's beautiful. I have everything I need. I was living on a farm too, and my exercise was picking my hay, you know, taking the food for the cattle. It was, you know, raising the chickens organically, just working on the garden. I just think it's so nice that you both are bringing to the light that being healthy Even when you're aging, you can use everything you have on your power. If you are in a farm environment, if you are in a house, if you are in an apartment, if you are wherever, you can find ways of, you know, practicing good protocols for you to age better. So I think this is something that I really like from your book, your approach on that, and seeing you both contrast, because you are the city guy and Dr. Ken Berry is at the farm environment, knowing that you both can successfully implement the same principles regardless where you are, I think is absolutely wonderful. And let me ask you something, Zane. You were mentioning that when you started getting interested in all of this fitness and getting to the personal training, your focal interest in the beginning was longevity.
Correct.
And I think this is why all of these podcasts are being so successful, because we are opening to the public information that was before into medical journals, in a highly, highly, highly technical language. I understand, because I read those for very, very long time. I love to read them. I'm an engineer, so I like to read technical stuff. But to the my audience, driving a car, the ladies dropping the kids on school, the guys driving to work, those terms, you start listening to some of those and you get disengaged because you don't understand what they're saying. At the end, you get lost. So in the longevity field, we are learning so much from those long-term studies, 35-year-old studies, 40-year studies that started very long time ago and now start showing the results on longevity. And we have seen that on the health span and the lifespan together, the group of the individuals tested better for longevity on lifespan and health span are those that successfully had been implementing healthy style of life, like kicking ass after 50, exercising, diet, and sleeping for longer time. So it's like you're putting savings in your bank of longevity as much as you do. What is your opinion on that?
I think that's absolutely essential to start as early as possible. And I say that when I talk to people, they say, well, I'm just 40, but I'm gonna get your book. No, start as early as possible. I didn't start at 50 to get into the kind of condition I am, you know, and it should, so it should be a lifestyle. That should be the goal. You think about in your 30s, okay, what do I want to keep kicking ass when I'm 50, when I'm 60. I don't want to be retired because I have a medical condition. I want to empower myself to make that decision when I'm ready to go, to say, okay, I'm time to let off the gas of my career and go have some fun and go spend more time with my family or whatever that looks like for you. That should be your choice, not because you had you could have prevented a disease that you didn't, because you didn't know any better, because you didn't take charge of certain areas of your health. These diseases that usually take most of us out, that put 80% of the people in the hospital, are largely preventable through lifestyle choices. And if you don't take charge of your health in your 30s and 40s, you're going to pay for it in your 50s. You start paying for your dietary sins, your indulgences in your 50s and 60s, all the choices you made the two decades before. Now, that doesn't mean when you're in your 50s and 60s, you can't turn stuff around. If you can fog a mirror, if you still have breath, you can improve your health for sure. Yeah. But it's going to be a lot easier if you've been even moderately consistent and on track with your health in your 30s and 40s. It doesn't have to be perfect. Mine wasn't perfect. I am far more consistent and on track with what I think is ideal now than I was in my 30s, but I was still making an effort to move forward and being consistent in what I knew at the time in my lifestyle habits as well as I could, with everything going on, with raising kids, with building a career. Mm-hmm. And that was what has got me to the point where now I'm fine tuning, right, in my 50s, or I'm really not worried about a disease like high blood pressure, high blood sugar, some pre-diabetes, something like that, blindsiding me. And I have very good control of my weight. I have great habits established that I'm not, I don't have to think about it. They're things that I crave now. And so I know when my body is off, but it's because I've spent years investing in those habits mm-hmm. that I'm where I am right now. And I can say, hey, this works and this doesn't. But no, absolutely, start as early as possible. It's like you said, it's like a savings account. The dividends will keep paying you as you age.
Definitely does. I mean, when I see, again, successfully aging people, like guys in the 60s, like Dr. Salivar, yourself, you look, you amazing physique. My husband is 75.
That's awesome.
Incredible. The muscle mass, the energy, the brain is just all combined, because moving that body, keep that, you know, blood flowing, is telling every single cell in their bodies that I can do it. I'm strong. I'm healthy. It's every day, instead of I'm in a couch, I'm sad, I don't want to do anything. It's just, I think empowering people as early as possible, you're right, is the right thing to do. And when we see our medical system, the healthcare mm-hmm. system in America, dedicating over $4.8 trillion in 1 year, this year alone, 80% of that spending is for chronic diseases.
Yeah.
Every to treat them. Where is the spending on preventing them? Is something that it tricks my mind, and I am just going, I'm coming from Colombia. It's a third world country. And is in general, you know, is a small economy compared with the United States. So when I came here 18 years ago, to me, and still to the day, I adore this country, is wow country to me. Wow. You know, it's what I said. This is a wow country. I love it. I was expecting that in the first economy in the world, we were having the healthiest people in the world, and we are not. Actually, we're ranking really low with all the you know, the developed countries in the world. So definitely is the moment, and it's through these channels, through this podcast, information out there, where we have to bring the people elements that they can start using, nutrition, fitness, sleeping, what they can do to start being healthy as soon as possible. So back to your book, Zane. You told us that there are three different life blocks, strategies, or pillars that you address with Dr. Ken Berry on the book. So for someone that is reading the book or is interested and is going to get the book, what would be like the starting point to start getting healthy? If they haven't done it yet, what would be like a good moment? Where would be like, this is where you really should be paying attention, and then gradually go to this and this step? What would be your advice?
I would definitely address your diet first, because it's how you nourish your body, how you feed your body. It's something you do every day. And if that's not in place, for instance, with fitness, you start working out first, and it's not a bad, I'm not saying it's bad, but if you start moving, you're going to get hungrier. Well, if you haven't got your diet in place, you're getting hungrier for more bad food, the food that you haven't corrected that, you're just going to eat more bad food, right? And you really can't outrun, especially at 50, even over 40, you're not going to be able to outrun or out exercise your bad diet. Get your diet in place first, because that's not only, it's not just weight, but it's going to affect the health markers in your blood work as well. So you're affecting, your body is hormonal. It's biochemistry. It's not a lawnmower. We're not trying to just manage calories here. We're managing food mm-hmm. quality, which affects the building blocks of your body, affects the hormones like insulin and growth hormone and all these, and hunger hormones, satiety mm-hmm. hormones. And so how you feed it is going to determine how you feel and how it responds to the stress of exercise, or how well you sleep. So we recommend people start in the book with just getting down to, you know, three meals, no snacks, stop snacking. Three meals, focus on nutrient density, which means 70% of your plate at minimum is some sort of animal food. And then whatever other whole food you mix in there, whatever veggie or fruit, whatever it is you add to it, let it be a whole food. Make sure that that veggie or fruit lines up with your fitness goals as far as, you know, what you're trying to accomplish or if you digest it well. But stick to whole food. Stay away from the processed food. If you can eliminate processed food, move to whole food, and then eat three meals that give you enough the animal protein and fat that you need, you're going to be ahead of 90% of the population there. And you're going to start seeing your health change in a matter of weeks because that processed food is putting inflammatory products in your body, processed oils, processed grains, and processed sugar, all of those things that were not in our diet the way they are now 150 years ago. The processed oils didn't exist 150 years ago. We certainly weren't eating this much sugar. That is multiplied by 10. All the grains were like people made from scratch, but they were also they weren't eating all this processed stuff. Everything was made like from a farm, like you would eat on a farm. That's if we had stuck with that, we wouldn't have this health crisis. And so the infiltration of processed food into our food system since the 20th century, right? Mm-hmm. Since the early to mid 1900s, that's when our diet started going downhill. That's when our obesity went from 1900 of 1% to now it's 42%, where heart disease started becoming the number one killer when it was almost non-existent. And type 2 diabetes wasn't detected until 1930s. We have created this epidemic of metabolic disease starting with our diet. Nobody went to the gym 100 years ago.
No.
I mean, very few people, right? We moved, but we weren't trying to do all these crazy, you know, and I'm all about the gym. I'm all about working out, obviously, but the biggest change to our health has come from our diet. That's what's changed, our food system. And so we need to address that first, get that in place so that all your other efforts will make sense, will actually have some, be productive. So I'd say three meals, whole food, primarily animal foods on your plate, avoid snacking, and try to get those three meals within a 12-hour window or less. So you have a 12 hours, maybe 14 hours between your dinner and breakfast. That would give your body enough time to have a little fasting, have a little break, be able to burn some fat while you sleep. And that's a really simple step.
Mm-hmm.
And then move into exercise and applying a sleep schedule. But the first step is diet with food quality, a decent food schedule, and then you can add some complexity down the road. And once you get that down, but a lot of people can go a long way with that simple step.
I heard the other day in a stats that, I mean, really blow my mind, saying that only 12% of the adults in America are metabolically healthy. 12. Yeah. So we need to get that number higher. We need to have more people coming into this wagon of wellness. It is, I mean, and again, sometimes people can find excuses because they don't understand how what the benefit to eating whole foods is. A lot of people may think that is expensive. And I would say do it in a smart way. It's actually, and I'm telling you, I'm an engineer. I like numbers. I run my budget and I knew how it was before and how it is now, where I needed only whole foods and not processed foods. And it is a big difference also because of the quality of food you're putting in your body. You feel the society is a lot better. You feel more complete. Plus, the result at the end is always better. So my question, the next question to you is, right now, I see, you know, it's very, the movement of the carnivore diet is strong right now. I did it, the carnivore diet myself. A full carnivore for almost a year. Then my husband jumped into. I did that following all of the videos with Dr. Ken Berry. He was my teacher from the beginning, so I love it. And we started on COVID, and then later we had been, you know, moving into more implementing new foods just to give a variety to our microbiome, which had been great. My question is, do you think for people after 50, especially. 100% carnivore diet is better approach for aging, or whole foods diet with an emphasis of animal proteins is the way to go to kick ass after 50?
Ooh, that's a question I'm gonna approach delicately.
Sure.
I think both can be done. I think yes. Most people will have an easier time with the latter, which is an animal-based whole food approach, especially after 50. I think there's some, and you really have to assess what your case needs are. Yeah, case by case, I have to say that. And I think carnivore is fantastic if you're trying to move the needle quickly, like you want to lose a lot of weight or turn your health around. It's a great tool to make some quick changes, which are motivating. When you get those changes, it's like, oh, you want to keep going. You want to see quick results.
You see it fast.
Yeah, and your body will respond. So if you want to go far quickly, you want to go fast and make big, quick changes, do that. Go carnivore. And it will fantastic. And then once you get to where you want to be, if you decide at that point, you feel like you might, you know, to adjust a little bit and allow some other foods in, make sure they're whole food, then you figure out what's working for you. I do see a lot of people. I mean, I've seen people thriving over 50 as carnivores, and they seem to love it, and they feel it, the simplicity of it, and they don't feel any downside from it. Personally, this is something I had to learn the hard way. Just in my late 40s, I was doing a lot of fasting. I was doing a lot of fasted workouts, and I wasn't eating carnivore, but I was very, 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 very low carb with all these fasted workouts and long fasting days. And it was a little too, I was pushing the needle too much. Those are all metabolic stressors, and they're all good tools. None of them are bad things, but I was doing too much of all of them for that point in my life, for everything else I had going on with my career, whatever else. There's stress builds up. And so at a certain age, like maybe I could have handled it at 38, but at 48, I was feeling a little bit overtrained. I was kind of run down. My sleep was starting to, so my cortisol levels were high. My TSH, which is a thyroid stimulating hormone, which is a result of high stress, was a little high. I had another hormone marker that was high in my blood work. And I thought, well, if I just adjust, let's say a little less fasting, maybe allow a little more rest in here, and maybe a little more fruit here and there, a little more carb, whole food. Can I correct this? So I corrected it. My sleep started getting a little better, feeling more adjusted. So for me, I had to create fewer metabolic stressors. And so that's how I did it. I still think all those are great tools, and I still want to implement them and put them in my life. I just can't pull on all of them at the same time as hard as I was before. And so I think that's part of aging, is to realize I'm not going to perform like I did at 25 or 35 at 55. Okay, I'm not going to have that level of physical resilience and important from a healthy 35 to a healthy 55. Now, if you are out of shape in your 20s and 30s, by certainly your 50s can be the best shape of your life, relatively speaking. But I was always healthy, so I was used to pushing the needle all the time. And I had to think, okay, why am I doing this? Am I doing this to be, to do all of these things so hard, you know, to be so hard and so hard going and to push the needle on everything? Or am I doing this for my personal performance, to show up for my career, for my family, to be healthy? And if I'm seeing negative markers in my health, if I'm feeling run down, okay, I need to make adjustments. And know that age is not something to ignore. It's something that you approach head on and realize, okay, I have to accommodate I have to be more consistent. I have to be more deliberate. I have to be wiser in the way I approach my health at this point in my life, because I can't get away with what I got away with at 30. That's not weakness. That's wisdom.
And I agree.
Age is the number one risk factor for any condition. The older you are, the higher risk you are for any disease, illness, chronic disease. Your risk goes higher with age. That's a fact. And so you have to be willing to accept that and not be so married with an idea or an ideology that you ignore what your body is telling you or what it needs. I've already done that. I did that with vegetarianism in my 20s. I did that with all the stressors. I was kind of in the wake of doing that with all the stressors in my late 40s. And hopefully I learned from that and realized, okay, what is best for me right now, not what fits into this ideological box. And so for like Dr. Barry, my co-writer, he tends to, and he'll say this, he had metabolic disease as a doctor. He had the issues that his story is known.
Yeah, he does was obese when he was working in ER at the hospital. He tells the stories. Yeah. He suffered it himself.
Yeah. He does better as a carnivore. Mm-hmm. He does better with very, very low carb. I do not. I feel like I'm losing weight too fast, or I'm shriveling up. I feel a little bit like a little overstressed in that way. And I need a little extra. And maybe that's because I'm hitting the gym or because of other stressors I have in my life. But I think it's just two different body types or two different experiences. And so I allow for that. Like, I don't say my way is the best way. It's just what I have found works best for me. And so it's a long way. That's why I said I want to approach this delicately, because I'm not making hard line statements for everybody. But I think most people, get yourself to a maintenance level. Carnivore is a great way to do it, to hit your where you feel like, okay, now I'm fine tuning what my body's like. I'm not trying to make big changes. And then you might do better over 50 with a little bit of whole food carb in there. But don't be afraid of that. You know, find out what works, find out what your mix is of that, and go with that. Go with what your body's telling, what your blood work's telling you.
I love what you say that, because I really think the carnivore diet works wonderful. And it's like a tool, and I use it for the time. And I'm telling you, we came back from vacations in Europe, and we both, my husband and I, put quite a few pounds. Like, we literally, you know, barely could get in that clothes. I mean, it was too much wine, too much of that good stuff over there. And we came back and said, oh my God, carnivore. We went into the carnivore. He lost 33 pounds in 3 months and a half, doing that and intermittent fasting, saunas as well. So mobilizing all of that visceral fat out, sweating it out, detoxing. So it was a combination of protocols, but he was very successful on that. Now he achieved a goal of the weight. I always been very slim, 120 pounds, 5'2". So, I mean, I'm in my sweet spot right now. But now that we are there, then what you say is maintenance. It's just introducing in our body, in our diets, sprouted in fermented foods. I love them. I love papaya. Sometimes I'm craving it. I know I can eat it. I know my body. If I want to eat it, I can eat it. It's fine. You know, the sweet potatoes. It's fine if we have a dinner out with the kids and we get a little more of the carb here and there, because we are doing maintenance. We are super in tune on what is good and not. So I totally agree with that approach that you just mentioned. It's case by case, and it's a tool, and it's excellent. We use it. And for times of times, I go back to a full carnivore for a week or two, and I love it. Love it, the simplicity. You know, it's great. So next topic I would like to talk to you, and this is interesting. My husband and I have been doing hormone replacement therapy for a few years under the supervision of a highly trained physician in Florida. Excellent. We check our blood levels every 4 months, the whole thing by the book, consistently. Very, very good. Now, as a personal trainer, you're probably aware that a lot of guys out there, they develop a relationship with the clients, they trust them, and then little by little, they start pushing these black market drugs and steroids. They look into different additional, you know, streams of revenue, and no, this is safe, they do it. And I'm telling you this because my husband, he used to have a personal trainer 25 years ago. Nice guy, the nicest guy, but he was pushing on those things and he never did it. What is your advice for those out there listening that may be tempted? Because, hey, it's a temptation to look certain way or the other, or being, you know, the beach body, you mentioned it.
Right.
And it is so much of those hormones, human growth hormone and steroids that are being sold online on the black market. What is your advice for those that are being tempted, that receiving those messages, do it, it's safe, it's fine? What is your opinion on that?
Another delicate subject.
It's happening, Zane. It's happening.
No. I understand. There's a confusion, I think, too, between what you're talking about, the hormone replacement therapy, which I think is awesome for people as we get older. More than half my clients have some sort of hormone replacement therapy, because most of my clients are in that older age. And it's a life changer. It just opens up. It's not about, and when you're doing that, when, like you said, it's supervised by a doctor, it's biologically identical to your own hormones. Mm-hmm. And it's not about, you're not doing it for the gym gains. You're doing it because it opens up your brain. It's the drive. It's like, it makes you feel optimistic about life again, because those hormones are younger. You feel younger in your mind, in your body too, but it's not a steroid. It's not a synthetic or something pulled from a bull or some other animal that doesn't belong in your body. It is identical, and it's being managed at a level that you would have been maybe 20 years younger. And at some point, your lifestyle habits, you can optimize that. But at some point, just like we said before, age is a real thing. Your body's just not going to put out as much sex hormone as it did when you were in your 30s and 40s.
Absolutely.
And so to replace that, for women, game changer. Men, it's like it opens up a whole new world for them, and that high performance in their career, being there for the family. That is very different from what you're talking about with the illicit steroids and so forth that's being sold black market from a trainer. That's not the way to go. Those are very, very dangerous. You can enlarge your organs. You can decrease your own hormone production, your own sex hormone production from doing that as well, at an age when you should be at a peak. And so for younger guys, like 20s, 30s, even 40s, they should be able to optimize their lifestyle habits to get all the growth hormone, testosterone they need, and then start testing in your 40s to see what's your baseline and what starts changing. You know, start getting that blood work and watching it change, and then start making decisions with your doctor about approaching the bioidentical hormones. But the steroids, it's just definitely not worth it, because you are shortchanging your body's ability to adapt to a stimulus that you're more than able to adapt to if you make the right adjustments with your lifestyle. The gym gains for anything extra, gym gains, they're not worth the risk. There's a risk with it. And then you have someone who isn't trained to manage your blood work and who's looking at, who's selling you this and trying to help you figure this out based on your growth, only your muscle growth and your muscle, but they're not looking at what's happening to your liver, what's happening to your blood work, your thyroid. All these things have a downstream effect. And so there's a big difference there. Don't go with the illicit stuff. Wait until you're in your 40s, approach the bioidentical. That's just how I would approach it. But I think it's healthiest. It's not trying to be a puritanical. You're not trying to say, oh, I can do it all myself, I don't need help with anything. No, you do it at the appropriate time. You know what I mean?
No, and you need a professional. And I brought this up, Zane, because I watched the other day the Netflix series on Arnold. Have you seen it? Arnold Schwarzenegger on Netflix?
I've seen most of it. Yeah.
I have to say I love it because of the power of his mind was as strong as his body. I mean, he had a very fixed idea on what he wanted to do with his life, and he did it. So I think that power of manifesting, of being able to be disciplined enough to achieve that, was beautiful, and it was beautifully depicted on the documentary. However, you have seen this amazing body he had and this physique when he was young, and he, you know, tell all the journey to be this bodybuilder. He came to America, and then he said on the series that he started using steroids because he wanted to become that ideal bodybuilder to, you know, win over and over and over and over again. I see Arnold Schwarzenegger today, and he is my husband's age, few months older, you know. And I see him today, and it seems like, actually, I saw it, like, the mobility is not, like, terrific, and his body is not holding as well as I've been thinking he would be at 76. So from my observation, and this is only observing, seems like at the long term, all of the usage of those drugs for enhancing the physique, definitely is kind of like paying a price later on in life. I see him, you know, it's just an observation, but that does make me think. And I was just like, I want to ask you about this. And I'm glad you brought us clarity on that and encouraging people to get away from that thing. Do not do it. Just not. Okay. So we're talking about quick fixes here. And we know, Zane, that when people are in a little desperation, they, especially on the weight loss, they gain too much weight. They want to find an easy way of getting in shape, getting, like, reducing that weight to ideal, and desperately finding that protocol. Years ago, we had the bypass surgeries and all of that, helping them to do that, which was a great tool for many. I have both cases in close friends of mine, one very successful, and he was successfully able to keep the lower weight and manage it over the years. On the other hand, I have another friend that had a terrible, terrible, terrible experience, went back to obese in a worse way, and, you know, creating all kind of inflammatory situations. Today, we got this new magic pill, the drugs, the Ozempics that were prescribed initially for diabetic people, and now is being promoted as a weight loss. And unfortunately, people on social media, famous celebrities, advocating it. And yet it works, because we know the medicine works, but it's a quick fix, and I've been reading about it, and it seems like the long term of that is also tied to loss of the muscle mass, one. And two, it's also demonstrated when the people get out of the magic pill, the Ozempic, or whatever it is, the medicine, they gain their weight back because they didn't correct the habits of eating.
Exactly.
Do you really think it's a quick fix, a shortcut for weight loss?
It's being treated like one. It's not meant to be, in my opinion. I think it's very helpful for, like you mentioned, diabetics or people with extreme insulin resistance, because it does reduce insulin secretion. It reduces the amount of, so the liver, especially with diabetics, if people probably don't understand this, your liver regulates your blood sugar. And what happens with diabetics is you have both glucagon and insulin coming out of your pancreas, and your liver is ignoring the insulin, which is supposed to shut off the blood sugar coming out. So you have high insulin levels, and you have blood sugar many times, in all cases, but in many times, spilling out of their liver when it should be shut off, even when they've eaten. It's meant to just come out between meals to keep our blood sugar stable. So they have very unstable blood sugar, high blood sugar, because their liver's not responding to hormones. And so that Ozempic will help them, one, cut their hunger cravings so they stop eating as often, and slow down their gut so things move slower, which also makes them feel more full. But it also, at the right dose, will affect the liver's output of blood sugar. So it helps bring their blood sugar under control. But what we're seeing, people who want to lose 10 or 20 pounds, they're not insulin resistant at all, they just have they haven't taken control of their dietary habits or their drinking. And so it's trying to help them be more consistent. Well, for the diabetic, they've got blood sugar going crazy, hormones out of control, which makes it very difficult to change habits. So this can bring their blood sugar in control and give them enough personal control hormonally to change their dietary habits in a much easier environment. With someone who is metabolically healthy, who just wants to lose 10 or 20 pounds, I think you're messing with, one, your liver's ability to regulate blood sugar, which probably is what's affecting their muscle loss, as well as the appetite suppression, which is going to make them eat less. And they're probably not overindulging, you know, if they're metabolically healthy, they're eating less and they haven't changed their dietary habits. So they're eating less of, but they haven't changed what they're eating. In other words, they're not doing the things like, if you're going to eat less, maybe focus more on more protein and lift weights and do the things you're supposed to do anyway to maintain muscle mass and maintain a healthy, you know, just a healthy balance of nutrition. And they're not doing that. They're just using the Ozempic or whatever it is, Wegovy, you name it, to lower their appetite. And so they don't have to change their habits. So again, that's why you get the yo-yo effect where they come back. So I do think it's being abused. I don't think this is the first time we've seen a medicine abused that had one specific use. And now, oh, look, there's money to be made here and we got a celebrities to back it up. So let's just make it available to everybody. Now it's the number one demand, highest demand drug on the market. And there's a shortage of it. I think it's being abused. I think there's a great use for it in certain protocols to help sick people change temporarily. And even then, temporarily, until they adjust their blood sugar and their habits and then bring them off of it. But to just be selling it at every place that has a nurse practitioner in it to anyone who just wants to lose weight, I think is abusive. I think it's, and because people are not understanding the downside of it, or they're not mature enough to really weigh the short-term benefit they're getting versus the long-term risk.
I totally agree with you. And I think also is on the media, it's a lot of emphasis on those quick fixes.
Oh, yeah.
And that is a great diversion from promoting healthy foods. And I don't know if you remember, a few months ago, we had a huge controversy on media, in Twitter and in Instagram, everywhere. And that was about the Food Compass rating of foods.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it was so wonderful to see in our faces what this Food Compass, which is a rating created by some of the researchers at Tufts University, where they created a rating between 1 to 100, 100 being the healthiest foods, 1 being the most unhealthy. And they took 9 groups of foods and they start rating them. And someone, I don't remember who, put those in a chart, an organized chart. And what we saw was eye-opener. They were rating Cheerios, chocolate-coated almonds, tarts and frozen yogurts and a lot of candy way above, means more healthy, more rating than whole foods such as eggs. Actually, they have a rating for fake eggs being higher than the real egg. Mind blowing. And at the bottom of the chart, bottom of the rating, we had the ground beef, which is one of the most highly density foods that anybody can eat. So I really think that, and it is so sad to see that in the scientific community, some people are just compromised and just doing this because of the benefit of the food industry. And this is the standards that a lot of schools are using to produce the lunches for kids at school. 70 to 75% of foods on the public schools in America are overprocessed. Foods instead of whole foods. So the minority of the lunch is on the whole food side, which is the healthier side. And if we don't wake up until understanding that that is not right, and the whole foods is the answer, not overprocessed foods, nor industrialized oils and you know, grains and all of that nonsense, if we don't make this available, this information available to people, I think we're setting up for a disaster because our newest generations are going to be unhealthy.
Absolutely. We have our medical research and our nutrition research has been hijacked by the industries. And this is documented to the point. We had two research papers come out last year that showed that the Dietary Guidelines Academy or Nutrition Academy, the Dietary Guidelines Committee that creates our guidelines, basically, our nutrition guidelines every 5 years, 95% of them had some sort of conflicting interest with the processed food industry or someone making, you know, medical, you know, insulin, something like that, you know, somewhere in the pharmaceutical or processed food. 95% of them have conflicts of interest that they did not reveal, that they did not reveal to the public. So they have, they're receiving funding or they have positions like board seating. They sit on the board of directors of the processed food companies where they're receiving millions of dollars for funding the research. And then with the Academy of Nutrition Dietetics, same findings where they are sending their internal memos to the processed food industry for approval. They receive most of their funding from the processed food industry. A lot of them have their stock owned in the processed food industry by the Academy. And so they found that they were more of an industry voice. The people who create our education for our registered dietitians who certify them are receiving their money and become an industry voice for the processed food industry rather than putting out recommendations for the benefit of the public. This was a published article.
It's criminal.
We've been hijacked. And so that's where the processed food industry is second only. The processed food lobby, political lobby, as far as money, is second only to the pharmaceutical industry. Pharmaceutical industry is the biggest. I mean, people talk about big oil. Pharmaceutical is five times bigger than big oil. Processed food is right behind them. And those two work hand in hand to make sure that sodas are on the SNAP program that the government funding for people who are, you know, underprivileged, need money for groceries, that sugar water, sodas, is still on that list. 10% of the money from SNAP that goes out is spent, 10% is spent on sodas. Well, that's not nutrition. The purpose of SNAP program is to bring nutrition, that's the N in there, nutrition to people who can't afford it. And yet we have food on those allowable purchases that they should not be ingesting. And so that's why we have this disease. That's why you mentioned 12% of adults are healthy, are medically healthy, is because we're funding the disease. Our recommendations fund the disease. Or telling people this is what you should eat, and they're putting, like you said, schools, military, hospitals. It's a well-funded campaign to put processed food on our tables, and we're subject to it.
I just think it's a vicious circle because the food industry is promoting the unhealthy foods, creating an unhealthy human, which finally is going to have a lot of chronic illnesses, inflammation, producing a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous stress into the healthcare spending. 80% is only for chronic illness. Can you believe that? 80% right. Of the health. I mean, how much money is that in $4.8 trillion? Is a lot. I mean, it's very difficult to keep the numbers in our minds.
It's $3 trillion.
It is. It's so, I mean, and where is the prevention? How much can be done educational-wise in prevention programs to keep the people healthier? It was, I mean, I don't remember when in the recent years, really, the government has had the focus on the health and wellness. I remember when JF Kennedy was promoting those programs on the healthy and fit, and it was huge, huge program because it was beautiful to see America healthy. We need to go back to see America healthy, Zane. And these channels, when we talk about it and we open the people's eyes to understand that they can do it if they take control of what they are eating, what they are, how they move their bodies, how they're sleeping, I think we're making a huge service. And these channels, we don't have propagandas here. We don't have the 10 commercials pushing drugs here. It's only a conversation. And it's amazing because people are learning from it. So next question, and this is interesting because you mentioned also, we have been talking a lot about the nutrition and the exercising. You also mentioned sleeping. So on those two, in exercising and sleeping, what would be the recommendations or protocols from someone that want to get healthy after 50?
Okay. Well, exercise, depending on where you're starting, if you're just starting out, it can be very simple. I would say if you already have something in place, stick with that. And if you want to add to it, that's great, or modify it, that's fantastic. But I think if you're just starting out, we recommended 2 or maybe 3 days of some sort of intense activity. So that could be strength training or something that really gets your heart rate up, something that makes you fatigue, you know. Mm-hmm. 2 or 3 days of doing that, even if it's just 30 minutes on each of those days. So an hour and a half in a week split on 3 different days is enough to stimulate muscle. Make sure you hang on to your muscle. And then just be active. Find something that gets you moving. Now, if it's continuing in an exercise way or in a gym way on some sort of machine because that's what works for you or your schedule, fine. But doesn't need to fit into a gym environment. Go play pickleball. Go for a walk. Go for, you know, hiking and with something with hills. I mean, find some sort of activity that motivates you or that you enjoy. If you can, get outside to do it. Get some sunlight and break a little sweat. But it doesn't always have to be a gym activity. But we do, you know, some sort of primarily 2 or 3 times a week, a good 30 minutes of some sort of intense like activity that'd be considered like a strength or resistance work. Mm-hmm. Again, that could be lifting jugs of water. It doesn't have to be weights. But that is important as we age to help hold muscle in our body, because we will start to lose. It's called sarcopenia. We will start to lose muscle as we age if we don't use it. But then from then, it's just find something that you enjoy and have some fun doing, and maybe find other people to do it with. Sometimes mm-hmm. that helps. Finding community is very important for our health. And whether it's a spouse, a friend, a group of friends that get together and have the same community, I mean, that's going to keep you consistent because you enjoy it. And you're going to get the benefits of that community as well. And then with sleep, set a schedule that will allow you to get a minimum of 7 hours of sleep a night. If you can get more, closer to 8, great. But there's some things you can do to help yourself. Some people say, well, I go to bed and I can't sleep. Mm-hmm. Many of the habits we have during the day affect our sleep, like a lot of the screen usage right before bed, or eating a heavy meal within 2 or 3 hours of going to bed will disrupt your sleep, or alcohol within 2 or 3 hours of going to bed can disrupt your sleep as mm-hmm. well. And so wearing blue light blockers is great. And I do it, but I also try to move away from the small screens like the laptop and mm-hmm. phone and iPads within, you know, 2 or 3 hours, ideally, of bedtime. Find something you can do that will help you sort of land the plane, if you will, of your mind, like help your mind calm down. So try to stay away from work related activities. It can still be reading a book, something you have an interest in. It doesn't have to be mindless or useless, but just not work, not something that's related to something stressful, and let your mind calm down. Try to do some, if you can find a breathing exercise or some sort of stretching or something that helps your body calm down before bed, and then get it ready for that sleep time, and then be really committed to that sleep schedule, just like you would to a work schedule. Which going to bed around the same time and getting up around the same time is essential to let your body establish a circadian rhythm. And even getting sunlight early in the morning can help with that as well.
Very important. I hear about that in the Huberman Lab podcast. Yep. He said it over and over and over again. You wake up, go outside, and it's not to look directly to the sun, just be outside and, you know, receive the sunlight and get your eyes to see the sunlight, the natural light that will help you with your circadian rhythms. Can I share with you one protocol that really helped us to fix the nighttime routine in this house? The sleeping protocol for us was the infrared sauna, going at the sauna every night. I put one sauna in my garage here. This is my studio, which is my gym, my sauna, my studio, my office for engineering. Everything happened in this space. But at night, going into the sauna is incredible. My husband had prescription for sleeping for years. After we got that sauna and we go there 4 to 5 nights in a week, very rarely we don't go. I mean, mostly every night. That was the solution. He sleeps through the night like a baby, because after the sauna, take a shower, go to sleep, and we dim the lights in the house and then go and night night. Perfect. So that was a good thing. Very good.
Yes, I've heard that from other people as well. I've heard that consistently from other people.
Amazing.
The sauna, it's amazing.
Unbelievable. I love it. I thought the other day that if I can't take that with me to heaven, I will. If I was allowed, it's very nice. So to wrap up our conversation saying, please give us, let's empower the people out there. Give us like your message for those listening, for those reading your book, for those that are going to get your book and kick ass after 50. What would be that wrap up message for you today?
I would say, understand that you can do this. This is in your reach. We gave real simple steps. Start with simple steps that you can sustain and put those into place. Feel the benefits of those, but make it, you know, get them consistent. Mm-hmm. And then you can always layer in something. You want to change at a level that you can sustain and be consistent with, because it's consistency that's going to get you to do it. But let those habits be part of your routine. Feel the benefits from them to the point that if you didn't do them, you would miss them. That's what it will become. It doesn't feel like that at first, but be consistent with what, you know, with the simple things, and then you can add complexity as you go. Don't try to overdo it and turn everything upside down all at once. It doesn't need to, you don't need to create like a part-time job around your health in order to make changes. It can be really simple. You can fit into your routine now and make your motivation. Don't, you know, if you're over 50, you're not a young man anymore. You're not a young woman. You don't have those same aesthetic, maybe goals right now. You think, okay, that's not your goal. That's not going to be enough to get you out of bed in the morning. But more successful years in your career or more quality years with your family, that will get you out of bed. Put those things as your goalpost that you're looking for to motivate you to be consistent, to put these things into your life, because those are the things closest to your heart. Those are the things that get you out of bed already in the morning. They're the things that keep you driving forward. And this will allow you to keep doing that at a much higher quality and for a much longer time.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And before you go, I want to tell my audience that all the information of your websites, your social media outlets, where to get your book, everything is going to be linked below. So people can actually, if you, our audience, have questions for us, questions for Zane, just post those questions here in the comments. We'll be loving hearing from you and getting your feedback from this episode. And before you go, Zane, I know you are in Nashville, Tennessee. In August 26, we're going to have an event in Dixon, Tennessee, which is very close to Nashville, and it's called the Low Carb for Better Health. Dr. Ken Berry is a keynote speaker, as well as Nisha, his wife. We're going to have Dr. Eric Westman, Craig Emmerich, which was here in my podcast a couple months ago, Jennifer Williams, Autumn Waters, and the organization on the event is by Amanda Decker. Amanda Decker also was here in my podcast. This event is going to be wonderful. I invite you. I invite my audience. We open virtual participation on the event, so anyone from anywhere in the country, on the world, can tune in on this beautiful event and learn from these doctors why the low-carb approach to diet is better for living longer and being healthier and love longer, why not? And kicking ass after 50.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to that. That's great.
Absolutely. We want to see you there. My podcast is sponsoring the event. Okay. And also Espresso Coffee, which is my brand of coffee that I designed for the healthy community. And we are sponsoring the event, and I think it's going to be very nice. And since it's going to be also virtually open to the public, it's going to be great. It's a lot of information, a lot to learn, the latest and greatest on how we can achieve aging properly, being healthy at any age, take control of our nutrition, fitness, sleeping, and any other protocol that help us to be at our optimal level of health and wellness. So I appreciate very much you being here with us. Hope to see you next time. Hope to see you there in Dixon, Tennessee, August 26th. Low carb for better health. So thank you very much, Zane. Appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you, Claudia.
If you enjoyed the content of our podcast, please subscribe right here and hit the notification button. Let us know what you thought about our subject today with Zane Griggs. Leave us your comments down below. We love to hear from you. Also, if you can help us giving us a 5-star review, that would be amazing, because all of these algorithms in YouTube and the other channels will come up, and other people looking for content on health and wellness will find out about our podcast. That is a great way to support our channel. You know, we bring this content free of charge to you. We really appreciate your support when you go to the description box and see our sponsors and purchase our products. We appreciate it very much. And remember, until next time, health is wealth for the body, mind, and soul. Take care.
Thank you very much for listening. And if you like the information that we shared with you today, please subscribe to the Express Soul Health and Wellness podcast and follow us in the social media outlets of your choice. Until next time, please remember, health is wealth for the body, mind, and soul.